Coming to you from the mountains and the plain, the only conservative voices brave enough to push back. This is the Conservative Daily Podcast with Joe Otto.
The left makes all these accusations and the right says, oh, I just turned the other cheek, right? That's so ridiculous. That's so preposterous. No one would ever believe it. And then when they do believe it, they're surprised.
Max McGuire.
When you look at politicians on the left, they need to convince people that they are victims.
A resistance to the resistance. And now your hosts, Joe Otto and Max McGuire.
And welcome back to another edition of the Conservative Daily Podcast. My name is Max McGuire.
And I'm Joe Otto.
And today we are going to talk about what I think is the foundation of the modern Democrat Party. Well, actually, I don't think that's fair. I think that the modern Democratic Party focuses on two things: taking things away from people, and the topic that we're going to be talking about today, giving people free stuff.
Free shit.
That seems to be free shit. Sure.
Free shit. Let's just call it what it is. We just want to give everybody free shit.
I was going to go and try and get the clean tag on the Apple podcasts, but I guess we'll just go with explicit now. It's free shit. They are.
You mean,
wait,
we can't get the tag has to be either one or the other, explicit or?
We can list it as nothing.
Let's list it as nothing.
We'll list this as nothing. Everyone's already heard this. Free shit. That's what the Democrats' plan is, to give free shit. And their goal is to have a coalition of people that is larger than the people that they are taking shit away from. That's across the board. That's how democratic politics work. They promise one group of people something, but the only way they can deliver that is by taking it from another group of people. And they hope that at the end of the day, they've made more people happy than they've pissed off.
Well, I mean, if we're talking about free shit, I got a lot of free shit that I want, right? So let's start with my free shit, and then we can, you know, if they actually address my free shit, I might vote for them.
Well, here's a great thing. Have you heard of Andrew Yang?
No.
Joe? So he is actually running for president as a Democrat. It's not surprising you haven't heard of him. At one point, there were 24
of these guys. Yeah, I have. Hedge fund guy, right?
Yes. He is an Asian man running. He used to be one of those bottom tier candidates, 1, 2%. But in the next debate, he's actually going to be towards the center of the stage. He scored higher in the polls than Cory Booker, Klobuchar, Beto O'Rourke, and Julian Castro. So he actually isn't in the bottom tier anymore. He is middle of the road as far as the poll numbers go now. And Andrew Yang has a really unique proposal that I think you might like to help you get some of that free shit. It's called universal basic income. It's the idea that every American every month would just get $1,000 cash from the government. No questions asked, $1,000. Let's roll with cut one as he explains it.
It's difficult to do if you have companies like Amazon, trillion-dollar tech companies, paying literally zero in taxes while they're closing 30% of our stores. Now, we need to put the American people in position to benefit from all these innovations in other parts of the economy. And if we had a value-added tax at even half the European level, it would generate over $800 billion in new revenue, which combined with the money in our hands, it would be the trickle-up economy from our people, families, and communities up. We would spend the money and it would circulate through our regional economies and neighborhoods, creating millions of jobs, making our families stronger and healthier. We'd save money on things like incarceration, homelessness services, emergency room health care, and just the value gains from having a stronger, healthier, mentally healthier population would increase GDP by $700 billion. This is the move that we have to make, particularly as technology is now automating away millions of American jobs. It's why Donald Trump is our president today, that we automated away 4 million manufacturing jobs in Michigan, Ohio, and Pennsylvania, and Wisconsin. And we're about to do the same thing to millions of retail jobs, call center jobs, fast food jobs, truck driving jobs, and on through the economy.
Sorry, if I get you.
So we can cut it right there. That was him basically explaining how his proposed universal basic income would work and how it would benefit the economy. Every American would get $1,000 a month from the government to spend as they will. And under his plan, he would increase and add a value-added tax to products and services so that the government would then get that money back. It seems like a really silly thing to do from a tax perspective, from a revenues perspective. But what do you think about that, Joe, giving everyone $1,000 cash every month, no questions asked?
I think that in San Francisco and LA, they spend on the average $100,000 per homeless person a year. And that problem has gotten much worse. And so they're trying to create an economic solution to a non-economic problem. And that is, we want to use entitlements, and we want to use the I deserve, or you should have, or this should be free. And they don't understand that when you're just moving dollars around, I'm going to take $1,000, I'm going to hand it to every U.S. citizen. You get $1,000 a month. And you're going to add that to a value tax on products, right? Which, by the way, our system is completely overburdened on the tax that we pay today. You know, 27% fuel tax, sometimes as high as 30, 35% fuel tax. You have income tax. You have property tax. You have...
don't forget the death tax. When you die, you still have to pay tax. The tax, man.
We are taxed every way. Sales tax, right? We're taxed every which way that you could possibly be taxed. We spend a lot of time just trying to figure out what taxes we pay. We spend an enormous amount on paying accountants so that we can actually do our taxes, right? So they're trying to make this even more complicated. Now you have this value added tax, and I think that the ultimate outcome of this is we're going to see ourselves become much poorer. This experiment of, you know, giving back to individuals and having this minimum wage, so to speak, or minimum pay to each person was actually started in Venezuela. Right. They came up with this where everyone is an oil-rich country, and they're still an oil-rich country, but they're collapsing. Well, why? Because no one wants to work. They literally have outsourced most of the opportunities for even oil production or exploration. They've outsourced it to other countries, which are making those margins, those 30, 40% margins, and not leaving enough meat on the bone for the countries itself. So.
And that's part of the reason that this universal basic income won't work. The money just doesn't grow on trees. If you're giving someone $1,000 a month, you're taking that $1,000 from somewhere else. Now, Bernie Sanders, he says he's going to tax Wall Street. He's going to tax the people on Wall Street and tax them. Everyone has a plan of who they want to take the money from to give it to everyone else. So it isn't perfect like that. I mean, Alaska has something similar to this, where Alaska gives everyone, every Alaska resident, every year they get a check for the state's revenues related to oil and natural gas. That works because it's not a complete socialist economy, and it's actually based on something. It's not a promise that you get this amount of money no matter what. It's based on the actual revenues that come in.
But the average entitlement for people that don't work every month is close to $3,000 to $4,000 a month. It's the equivalent of $6,000 to $7,000 a month if you were actually working. So what's the incentive of somebody actually going and getting a job and working that job for any length of time if they know that the government is just going to be, I can be on their doles, I can get $3,000 or $4,000 a month in entitlements, and I can maybe get a job under the table, make a little bit more?
Yeah. It's self-serving. Well, there is no incentive. Which Yang kind of talks about that. He talks about automation, how it's eliminating jobs. He sees this as a replacement, in a lot of ways, a replacement for jobs. That instead of having that job, your job's been automated. His plan includes retraining people, just like everyone else, but it is giving this money to them in lieu of a job. I mean, if you look at the Green New Deal, in the Green New Deal is the same kind of principle, that everyone will be able to make money whether or not they want to have a job or can have a job. It's not just at this point whether you're unable to have a job. It's, do you want a job? If you don't want to work, okay, here's your check anyway. And well, you're right. There is no incentive to work at all.
So we pay on the average. What does the average person pay for their cell phone bills? Like $70 a month per phone? Is that about right?
Yeah. Me and my wife are $70 a month for two people, but we're on Sprint. So.
All right. So you're always like, hello, can you hear me? Nobody can hear you.
It's actually been pretty good so far, but yeah, it's between $50 and $100.
We will not get Sprint. Yeah. We will not be getting Sprint as a sponsor. It does not appear, but let's just hypothetically say it's $35 a month, right?
Yeah. That's like the bottom of the barrel.
Would it surprise you? So I spent a bunch of time in the Middle East and in Africa, and I would have to get these cell phones that had these SIM cards. And so when I was over there, I'd have this cell phone, and I'd plop in a new SIM card. What do you think that my cell phone bill was a month there?
Oh, well, when I was in the Middle East, it was ridiculously cheap for local calls. It was so much cheaper just to buy the minutes outright.
It was cheaper to call back to the U.S. My cell phone bill to make international calls, right, to actually call back to the U.S., talk to my family, ran about $16 a month for international calls.
Yeah.
$16. And I was there, you know, sometimes I'd be there 3-4 weeks, and my cell phone bill would be $16. In the U.S., if you try to make phone calls internationally, what do you think your phone bill would be?
Oh, depends on the program you have, but it's a lot more than $16. I mean, now it can be free if you use certain internet calling services.
Yeah, you can use Skype, VoIP services, things like that, right?
Google Voice, things like that. It can be free or next to free. But yeah, the legacy carriers charge a lot because they have that captive audience. Once you sign up for them, you don't think to buy a new phone when you get there, to buy a burner phone at the corner store and just buy a SIM card out of a vending machine. You don't think that. You think, I'll just have one phone. It's the captive audience. They have you, and they can charge whatever they want at that point.
Well, and I guess my point is that the cost of living for what we pay here because of taxes and regulations and things such as that are more expensive. It's more expensive to live in the United States than it is in Mexico. It's more expensive to live in the United States than it is in Canada or even some of the other more developed nations. I don't want to say that Mexico is not developed because it is. But in more developed areas, they have a lower cost of living. And a lot of that has to do with their tax structure. They have taxes in certain areas. But a lot of the taxes that we face here in the U.S. they happen everywhere. I mean, you have tariffs on products and beyond tariffs after they get to the actual stores, they pass on their, property taxes, and then you pay sales tax, and then you're already paying income tax, and you pay for taxes on.
Of course, yeah, you pay lots of taxes. That's definitely a given.
But the point
is one thing I would note though is that in the United States, while the plans are definitely more expensive than they need to, the one thing I did notice is that buying a private plan in the United States for cell phone service, the reception that I got and the overall service of the plan was much, much better than what's available overseas. Now, maybe that was just Lebanon, the fact that they had dial-up speeds, no data downlink at that time. You get what you pay for. And I guess that's a good segue into this next part, because I want to talk a little bit about healthcare. Healthcare costs are through the roof. They're so expensive. They rise every year, year after year, and you pay for the insurance and you pay through the nose for insurance. And then when you actually have to use it, you have to pay again. So the healthcare system is completely broken. But the plan to give everyone universal Medicare for all healthcare is, in my opinion, would be even worse. And here, let's go to Joe Biden and what he has to say about this. Let's go to cut two.
If you're not satisfied, you have another option. High quality options. The public option will be available in my plan. We'll make sure it's not quality. We'll make sure it's only affordable. Quality is affordable.
So this is one of those Joe Biden gaffes, Joe. It's not going to be quality, but it's going to be affordable. Why do we keep hearing that? That it's just their ultimate goal is to get as many people on the plans, not caring that it's going to be a lot worse.
Okay, so I'm just trying to still get through the fact that he said you'll have a public option. We have a public option, right?
We have Medicare for when you are over a certain age, and we have Medicaid for when you're disabled or you fall below a certain level of the poverty line. Those are safety nets, and they're designed to be safety nets for when you fall. It is there to catch you, either in old age or if you get hurt or you just have extreme bad luck. It's a safety net. But what he's talking about is for everyone. Now, he wants there to still be a private option, a private healthcare option. But if you hear it, he says that if you want quality, you can go to the private option. But for the public option, it will not be quality. It will just be affordable. My head's exploding just thinking about this. Because it seems like, I mean, this is what we always hear from the Democrats. They don't care about who they hurt, as long as they help more people. When the Affordable Care Act originally was passed, I remember my healthcare costs went through the roof. I had friends who were jumping for joy because they finally got free healthcare, not caring that I was paying double or sometimes even triple for what I used to get. And it's just so shocking to hear Joe Biden admit it. I think that's the main takeaway here. It's just so shocking to hear him actually admit, and that's his gaffe. It's gaffe-tastic. Admit that it's not going to be quality. It's just going to be affordable.
Well, and so people dying will be acceptable. So everything we said about healthcare going back to what the Democrats started to push, dating all the way back to 2008, is absolutely correct.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, we know that every time that a country has imposed universal health care, quality has gone down. You cannot give a country of 320 plus million people universal health care and have that be quality health care. The government can't run anything well. I mean, have you ever been on Amtrak? Amtrak, they might have changed it, but a couple of years ago, Amtrak had a huge scandal where in the dining car, they were cooking hamburgers, and it actually cost them more to make the hamburger than they were selling it for because of all the different union rules and the negotiations and whatnot. They were actually losing money serving a hamburger. If the government cannot serve a burger and turn a profit, I do not know how they could possibly provide health care to every single American and have it actually be quality.
Well, they can't.
I just don't see it.
They can't. And we could talk about the postage system too. So it's a private corporation that is subsidized by the federal government, and it'll be in the hole based upon entitlements. Again, entitlements. So yep. We could look at the postal service as a perfect example of, you know, how government feels that they can kick the can down the road in order to, take care of those entitlements, because entitlements are actually what caused the post office to have, I think they're in the hole every year, $3 to $4 billion.
Yeah, they're always in the hole. And one of the big problems with that is the pensions that they've promised past employees, these entitlements that you're talking about. They promised these pensions at a time when everything had to go through the mail. You want to pay a bill, it has to go through the mail. You want to send a letter to someone, had to go through the mail. So they promised these pensions, not even seeing down the road that the Postal Service, I don't want to say becomes irrelevant because you still need it for some things, but not to the tune of what the Postal Service used to be used for. So the revenue isn't coming in to justify and to pay those previously agreed to pensions. So it's completely messed up system right now. But you're absolutely right. You go down the line of what the government has tried to do, and everywhere there's waste, there's fraud, there's abuse, and nothing's profitable. And when you say that it's just going to be affordable, it's not going to be quality, what does that mean? Does that mean that you need a heart transplant and you're going to be waiting months on the list? Because that's what happens if you are in other countries like Canada or the UK and you need to use their public healthcare option. It's just people are jumping for joy over this, and that's what makes me so furious, because they don't see the writing on the wall that if you pass these kinds of things and you just want to give everyone the bottom of the barrel, just the basic care, not even caring about the fact that it's horrible service, it just makes me angry.
Well, we don't know what the service is. It could be great service. I mean, he's admitting it won't be great service, and we're anticipating it won't be great service or quality service because nothing the government does is
Medicare,
quality.
It's Medicare for all.
Right.
Medicare was supposed to be a program that would take care of every single elderly American. And right now, if you actually want to use Medicare, you still need to get other plans along with Medicare, the other parts. You can't barely anyone just uses Medicare. You still need private options as well. The whole thing is a sham. And doctors, many doctors don't even take Medicare. I mean, the best surgeons in the country don't work for Medicare rates. And we know that will just get worse if the whole program expands to include everyone. It's people just want the free shit. They want healthier. Now, I'm all for lowering healthcare costs. I'm all for reforming the system, like with prescription costs. Prescription costs are out of freaking control. How we pay 20 times more for a pill than what they pay for it abroad, just because the companies know that they can they can just get it here.
I think that's the point when I was talking about cell coverage, right? Or cell services, that we pay 100, 200, 300, sometimes 500% more than anyone else in the market, right? Where you can go buy something somewhere overseas, and you see it all the time. People go overseas and they come back with suitcases full of stuff because it costs so much less there.
Suitcases full of insulin.
Yeah, well, I mean, and we can get into that, you know, sense of entitlement that you have this Narcan that they use to resuscitate drug users, right? Yeah. That are overdosing. Yet an EpiPen costs somewhere between $400 and $600 for. You know, one is given free to people who abuse their bodies and make bad choices, and the other one is for someone that can, you know, has no control over it. They have a issue. They have a health concern that requires them, or you know, requires them to have that EpiPen because you know, they're allergic to this or that, and it's a life-threatening deal. But they have to pay in order to get that same type of protection for themselves. They have to pay $400, $600, $800. For a pin.
Well, realize that the government's paying that same price. The government might negotiate it down a little bit for quantity, but the government's still paying those absurd prices. And in the roundabout way, we're paying it, right? The money doesn't grow on trees. So when you see someone, people now are doing drugs right outside of fire departments because they know if they OD, the fire department has Narcan on hand, right? Yeah. So every day, the fire department is having to revive people who are overdosing outside, and that has a cost to it. And yeah, you want to save people's lives. I totally get it.
I don't. I'm going to say it. If you decide that you want to overdose on drugs, if you decide you want to put some foreign substance in your body, right, and it kills you, then I believe then it kills you. You've made that choice. No one else made that choice for you. And this fact that we are, you know, that we bleed for people who, you know, do not productively contribute to society, I don't care. I mean, I'm sorry, I don't. I don't care. I don't think that somebody that ODs should go through all of these painstaking efforts to keep them from dying when they do it over and over and over again. I think that if you take a drug and you overdose on it, then, you know, we're going to miss you, but bye. Oh, that was really harsh.
That was harsh. I guess that's a good time to break for a real quick commercial.
Hey, I'm telling you, Max, the reality is that we've gone to this place where we're this bleeding heart and we want to take care of everyone. The same thing can be said for what we talk about, you know, giving $1,000 to everyone or universal health care or, you know, not having to pay child or college debt or having open borders. We'd be the only country in the world with open borders, right? Yeah. Everything's about taking care of people who make very poor choices. Well, I'm out.
Well, if you get fired up about that, you're going to get fired up about this next topic, which is a plan to give $1.6 trillion in debt relief to Americans with college loan debt. But we're going to take a real quick break, and we'll be back on the other side to talk about this because it's crazy.
Ronald Reagan famously said that our freedoms are never more than a generation away from extinction. Conservative Daily exists to make sure that never happens. With our community of 700,000 members, we fight every day to hold Congress's feet to the fire and stop them from surrendering our rights and freedoms. The fight to take this country back is not over. Please join our movement right now by going to conservative-daily.com and clicking the subscribe button to sign up for our free call to action newsletters. We have a chance to save this country, but only if we all work together. Again, this is conservative-daily.com, and don't forget to hit the subscribe button at the top.
And we're back from the break.
Yeah, I'm fired up about it, and I think that, you know, that would be called a uncompassionate person because I want people to die, and that's not true. I want people to make better choices and contribute to society and teach your kids to be productive citizens and stop doing drugs, right? But
that theme of choices is important, because it seems that this push for free shit is not just trying to get free shit. It's trying to have the government absolve people of their bad choices. Now, with healthcare, some people have pre-existing conditions, and I'm not saying that. I totally understand the mindset there. But when it comes to college debt, this makes me furious, because the people who want college debt relief, want the government just to pay off all of their debt, those are the same people that made the worst decisions when it came to college. Probably shouldn't have gone to college to begin with. And if they were to go, shouldn't have picked the majors that they picked, shouldn't have picked sociology, shouldn't have picked philosophy. I mean, who has ever heard of a professional philosopher, right? And you have people who are taking out hundreds of thousands of dollars in loans to get a degree that says that they are a professional philosopher. But I want to play this cut real quick. We'll play two cuts back to back, and then we'll talk about it. The first one, cut three, this is Bernie Sanders' plan.
Bottom line is, we should not be punishing people for getting a higher education. It is time to hit the reset button. Under the proposal that we introduced today, all student debt would be canceled in 6 months.
Okay, let's cut it there.
Wow.
That's Bernie Sanders' plan. Now, when you add it all up, that's $1.6 trillion that would just be canceled. And of that, that debt is held by approximately 49 million Americans. Now, before we dive into this, let's listen to Elizabeth Warren's plan. Hers is a little different. She wants to just absolve 50K of the debt, but it depends on how wealthy you are. Let's go to cut four.
Anyone who's got outstanding student loan debt can have up to $50,000 worth of student loan debt canceled out, so long as their income is under $100,000, then it kind of steps in up to, there's no help for anybody whose family income is above $250,000.
Wow. So that's her plan, 50K if you make under $100,000, and then that relief drops off the closer you get to 250K.
You know, now, I don't, there's so much wrong with this that people don't understand it. Only the people that have the student loan debt that have to make that payment every month are the ones that are saying, oh, this could be really great. I want him for that. Economic reasons, right? So the same economic reasons that they want to, you know, bring some, you know, socialist Democrat in there that's going to get rid of their student loan debt is the same person that's going to be screaming foul when, you know, the nominal wage that they can earn is now, you know, capped at $50,000 a year, right?
Yeah. Well, if you just look at the pure numbers of it, I went back and looked at it. Some places have different numbers, but approximately 1/3 of all Americans went to college, which means that 2/3 of Americans have not gone to college. Now, of the third that have, not everyone has student loan debt. And many of them have some debt, but not nearly anywhere near the 50K. So what this proposal is, even though they say that they're going to tax Wall Street, those taxes get trickled down. If you want to tax Wall Street, it's going to be more expensive for everyone else to invest in the stock market. It all gets passed down. This is asking the 2/3 of Americans who did not go to college to pay for the 1/3 of Americans who did, but made a horrible life choice.
Yeah,
am I missing anything?
No,
because they're calling this punishing people for getting a higher education. No one's being punished. The only people that are being punished are the people who went to Harvard to get an interpretive dance degree and realized that, hey, it probably wasn't worth taking out a loan for $300,000.
Well, I mean, the other issue is that we're actually pushing kids to go to college that should have gone to a trade school. We're pushing other kids to go to college to get liberal arts degrees, to not learn anything about what really happens in the workforce, only to get out in the workforce and be a complete enigma to employers, right? So they're frustrated. You know, I will tell you this, people are frustrated by what they're actually experiencing in going out and looking for a job, right? and not being able to find gainful employment where they're making a living wage after they just spent $100,000 on the education. But
you're telling me people aren't hiring feminism studies majors?
No,
there's no feminism factory. Is that what you're telling me?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, they hire them as baristas at Starbucks.
I mean, yeah, which is whenever anyone says they want $15 minimum wage, I tell them that they should have gone and became a welder, because right now there's a shortage of welders in this country to the tune of 290,000. That's just open positions right now that would be filled if we had more welders. And an entry-level welding position will make a hell of a lot more than $15 an hour, and it won't cost you an arm and a leg to get trained and learn how to do it. But you don't see that. No, this isn't just about they made a bad decision. They want a certain quality of life. They want to be able to go to college for 4 years, have someone else pay for it, learn absolutely nothing that can help them in the real world, and then they complain that they're only making $12 an hour flipping burgers when they probably shouldn't even be making that, if we're being honest.
Yeah, but we call these people educated, right? We literally call people who go get a feminist degree or basket. We used to call it basket weaving back in the day, right?
Well, it's underwater basket weaving.
Underwater basket weaving.
Extreme is an extreme example.
But we talk about these liberal arts programs, and what we should be doing is saying shame on you to the education environments, right? To the universities, because frankly, they're not preparing, you know, young people for opportunities in the marketplace. They're so far off what should be taught to them that, you know, people are coming out ill prepared to face the what happens in the real world. It is. And by the way, both my kids are in school now, right? At universities now, studying. And I'm going to tell you that they come home and they talk about some of the things that they learn in school, and some of the things that they learn, I remember back being taught the complete opposite, even down to how they're taught certain math skills. I mean, at a university level, and I'm discouraged by some of the things that they're actually learning, because it has no universal importance to what they're actually going to be doing when they get out in the real world and getting a job. So they find themselves supplementing what they do, you know, during the summers and time off by taking, you know, continued education courses within the environments that their interests are, and getting internships so that they can actually learn more about what really is happening in the marketplace. So the education that we see today just isn't the same education as it was, and that's causing us to fall behind, I think, in what kind of workforce we produce and the type of innovation we have in the market.
Well, there's another thing that Democrats are pushing, which is still about college debt, and that is that they want to make college debt – they want to let you be able to discharge it through bankruptcy. So I don't know if you knew this, Joe, but if you take out a college loan and you go bankrupt, that debt doesn't get wiped out except for some very, very rare circumstances. When you come out of bankruptcy,
if you're personally
you still
disabled,
have to pay that debt.
You don't have to pay that debt. If you're unable to work,
yeah. If you're able to prove a serious hardship, but next to no one is able to actually do that. It's a very small percentage of people who can get college debt discharged through bankruptcy. One of the proposals on the left is that they want to make that possible now, which that makes me laugh because one, actually, I love the idea. Part of me loves the idea because when you go to get a student loan, you don't have to put down any collateral. You don't even have to tell the bank what you're going to be studying. The bank doesn't look at you and determine whether you can pay the loan back or not. They give you the loan because they know how hard it is going to be for that to be discharged through bankruptcy. They know that you're going to have to pay it one way or another. So they give you the loan. If this actually happened, now, I hate the idea of this because I don't like this kind of government intrusion into the market. But if we actually did this, the result would be that the banks would be much stricter in who they approve loans for. You wouldn't be able to get $300,000 to go to Harvard to study basket weaving or interpretive dance. It just wouldn't happen because the bank would say, oh, there's no way in hell you're going to be able to pay back that loan. So I like this. Part of me likes this a lot because it would force these same people unknowingly. They don't know that this would be the result. It would force them to make better decisions. They wouldn't be able to go into this and say, yeah, I'm going to spend, I don't know, $500,000 to go undergraduate and then to get my graduate degree to become a teacher where I'm going to end up making $35K. I love teachers. My wife started out as a teacher, but it's not, you shouldn't take out debt to become a teacher. It doesn't make sense at all.
Yeah. I mean, I think that, by the way, there are programs out there for teachers specifically that if you work in underdeveloped or impoverished environments, that they'll forgive a certain amount of your debt or pay a certain amount of your student loan debt back with service, right? So serving a
my wife was going to qualify for that, and then she ran for the hills because she couldn't possibly even fathom staying in inner city schools that long to qualify for it.
Well, part of it was, I remember the conversations you were having that these kids were cussing her out and not listening, and the principals and the administrators were basically not, they didn't have her back, right? I mean, it was terrible.
They didn't have their back. And I think part of that was that it was a grinder, and they knew that if she left, there was another college student, bright-eyed college student, college graduate, ready to take her job. Because it had those benefits. It had the ability to get rid of debt, right? It, on paper, it looks like a really great opportunity. But in reality, it isn't. And I actually do know a couple of people who have been teachers, and they've gone through it, and they've checked off every box. They've met every single requirement, and they still haven't had their debt paid off. So, I mean, like always, it's a federal program. You get what you pay for. Don't expect to get what you signed up for. I part of me wants this. I mean, like, I just got a mortgage, and to get the mortgage, I had to prove that I could pay back the mortgage. You don't have to do that with a student loan. I think that would be better for the country. It would stop people from going to college, but I think those people probably shouldn't be going to college.
Well, I don't know if you can say that someone shouldn't go to college. I just think that college isn't meant for everyone, and that's what they're doing. They've actually marketed that going to college will lead to prosperity, and that's not true, right? We overvalue education, we undervalue competency and common sense. And rather than looking for those characteristics of people who have that A or B personality, right, we concentrate on saying, hey, C is good enough. I mean, you could go to college now. My son told me about, he came home after his first year and said, hey, Dad, they have this program where if you say that you have a learning disability or you have, you know, that you're having trouble learning, they will actually slow it down, give you a tutor, and some of the classes will grade you on this curve. And I go, what are you talking about? And he goes, yeah, this kid just doesn't have to do the same work we do, and he ended up getting an A, and I got a B in the class. So I'm oversimplifying it, but the reality of it is that we come up with excuses why people can't actually perform, and if they can't perform, they shouldn't be there. That probably isn't what they should be doing, but we don't do that. We enable people and push people towards something they can't accomplish because they don't have that competency or don't have that common sense or, frankly, just aren't smart enough to be in the environment that they should be, that they're in, right?
Square peg, round hole. And you see this in countries that have government-funded education. You take the tests as a high schooler, and those tests determine whether or not you will qualify for government-funded education. You're not just going to be able to get a free philosophy degree. There's no shortage. There's no philosopher shortages right now. So I think it's interesting because this issue in particular, you hear them demanding it, and it sounds great, but it's one of those things where if you actually go down this path, they haven't thought it through. They haven't thought through the consequences of having this debt be dischargeable. And I just think it's funny. That's all. I think it could do a lot of good. But you're absolutely right. College today is not what college used to be. Too many people go to college. There are too many colleges. Right now, you can pull out your phone in your pocket, and every single bit of human knowledge is at your fingertips. But we're being told that you need that the best way to move forward is to pay hundreds of thousands of dollars, ship someone across the country, and have them go learn from someone else. It's an old model.
Well, it's not only it's even older because a lot of these professors have no real life experience, right? They went from the education environment to being a professor. So that, you know, kids today need to understand the experiences they're going to have when they hit the workforce. We should have conversations about, hey, this is what's going to happen when you enter this type of environment, or these are the things you're going to learn on the tech side. This is the things you're going to learn in journalism. But, you know, what we've created is almost like we've weaponized different environments in the universities in order to teach kids about an ideology rather than about experience, the things that they should be concentrating on when they hit the workforce. It's not the same anymore.
It isn't the same. And
I'm sure 100 years ago that there was, you know, my great-grandfather probably said, you know, today is just, it's not the way it was when I grew up, right? We've evolved. An evolution of how we think about things has changed. Thank God, right? Because, you know, I'm not sure I'd want to live in a world where there was slavery, right, that was accepted. I'm not sure. As a matter of fact, I know that I wouldn't want to live then. And I wouldn't want to be in an environment where segregation was a thing, right? I don't believe that is morally right. But at the same time, I ask myself all the time, like, should I be supporting Medicare for all? Should I be supporting this universal wage that they want to pay everyone $1,000 a month? Maybe it's just me. Maybe I'm not seeing things right. Then I go back to this thing called math, right? And the math doesn't add up, right? People today are not more productive. They're less productive, right? People today are weaker in what we're able to create and innovate holistically. And there's less opportunity, I think, for kids today than there was 30 years ago. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that we were playing from behind, right? So
it's absolutely true. It is. And you mentioned experiences, which is what really sticks with me, because college isn't about making you more prosperous, giving you the ability to make more money. It's about giving you an experience, which is why if you go on any college campus, there's more drinking than studying going on.
Right.
If we're being honest, there's a lot more drinking than studying.
Well, it's not as difficult. I mean, when I went to school, it was difficult. It was difficult.
Well, yeah.
And I don't mean this. I didn't have to walk uphill, you know, both ways, barefoot, right, in the middle of a snowstorm. I didn't have to do all that. But I do know that I didn't have a computer. I didn't have a Google. I didn't have a Bing. I didn't have any of that. I had an encyclopedia. I had to know what the Dewey Decimal System was. I had to go to the library and I had to research things. I had to read an entire book. You didn't have Cliff Notes on how to write a paper about things. We've taken away the discovery process of what people can find, right? How people find information. We've taken away the heavy lifting. And as a result, we've become really lazy in how we actually produce things as a society. It's crazy. It was more difficult back when I went to school than any of these kids could even understand, because you want to talk about having to make sure that you were right and you research things. You couldn't plagiarize things. Now you can plagiarize your entire paper. They sell you papers.
Well, yeah, but the technology actually makes it today a lot harder, because they can scan it in and they have whole databases of papers from around the country to make sure that nothing's plagiarized. But you're right. It has become easier. And instead of people using this technology to go farther, they're using it as a crutch. So they don't have to work as hard. They don't have to study as hard. And they can just party, which is why I wonder, if we were to go this route, pay off everyone's student debt, make it dischargeable through bankruptcy, right? Does anyone seriously think that someone who went to school for interpretive dance, spent 300 grand on interpretive dance at some Ivy League school, does anyone seriously think that if you clear all of their debt, they're suddenly going to start making good decisions again? I mean, you're going to see, if you do this, you're going to see people getting loans to drive cars that they have no business driving, getting loans to go on vacations that they probably couldn't afford if they didn't have a loan for it. I mean, that's the whole mentality, is that if you want a good experience, if you want to have an easy life, don't worry. There's a lender out there who will make it happen. And oh, if you fall back on payments and you can't actually pay back what you promised, don't worry. There's a Democrat out there who will make it all go away too. There's a theme in all of this, and it's that, don't worry, there's a Democrat out there somewhere who, if enough people vote for them, they're going to get rid of this problem for you, as opposed to telling those same people to work harder and to push for it and find ways to fix the problem yourself. I mean, it's not all problems are fixable, but not every problem should be a ballot issue either.
Yeah, well, I think that the reality that we face today is almost, it's really sad. What's good is bad, and what's bad is good. And we found ourselves in a place where entitlements and giving to other people in order to buy votes is exactly what the Democrats stand for. They stand for buying votes. And then the Democrats just seem dumb enough, or people seem dumb enough, that they actually think that some greater good will come out of it. You could look at anything that a Democrat's ever touched in the last 50 years, and there's nothing good that's come of it. I mean, we name one thing.
No, you can't. There are entire cities that are complete shitholes because of 100 years of Democrat governance. You talk about buying votes, and I guess we can end on this. You talk about buying votes. You get fired up about the issue of reparations. I get fired up about this too, because my family didn't own slaves. And I just think it's ridiculous to tell people who didn't own slaves that they have to now pay people who were not slaves themselves. It boggles my mind, because this is the ultimate buying of votes. This is the ultimate free shit giveaway, that by simply the color of, by virtue of the color of your skin, another race of people suddenly owe you money. I can't even fathom how we're here.
Well, you're buying
all
votes.
The advancements that
you're
we've
buying
made.
You're buying votes. You're buying votes from people who have been repressed in an environment that's run by Democrats. So the Democrats are saying that they want to give you an opportunity. They're going to give you free money, right? So you can continue to not have opportunity. So the whole idea of reparations is to keep someone in a place where they are depressed. And if reparations ever worked, go to an Indian reservation and tell me how it's working out.
It's, I mean, what? The casinos are nice, but once you leave the casinos,
who owns the casinos?
Well, the tribes are supposed to be owning.
Okay,
the casinos,
so the tribes own them. Go to an Indian reservation, any of them. Go to any Indian reservation. Get right outside of the casinos. Go visit some houses. Go visit some people that live on the reservation, and tell me how well those people are doing.
Oh yeah, no, it has not made their life better. I mean, maybe it makes their life a little bit better, but
they get free education.
It's not giving them a good life.
Max, they get free education. How's that working out?
Yeah, you go down the box and they get the freebies. They've checked all the boxes and it has not.
How is it working out for them? How many people from an Indian reservation actually get out of the reservation? They're given free stuff, free housing, free land. And let me just go back to what I said about free land that they owned before we took it away from them and gave them back their land. So to a large degree, you know, the Indians have been A, marginalized, and two, as close to genocide as you can get. We did that against the Native Americans. We did that. But I don't want to make an excuse for it, but it's happened over the last 2,000 years and on literally every continent. But the indigenous people of this continent have been marginalized, and then we came back and we said, okay, we're going to give you free land, we're going to give you reservations, we're going to pay you, right? Give you reparations for the fact that we took your land. So you have, and we're going to give you opportunity. If you want to have casinos, we're going to have casinos. Right, but drugs and alcohol, and again, they have free education, so they can just have schooling up until college, right? That's all free too, And then when they get to college, that education's free. Just tell me how well that's worked out.
No, yeah, it's the perfect case study, because as you described it, the history of the of Native American peoples have been so, they've been so mistreated, that if you're looking for a case study for a people that are at the bottom of the barrel, that they have just, they have lost everything, and you give them everything for free, you give them their housing, their land, healthcare, everything, you give everything to them for free, it doesn't move the needle. It doesn't all of a sudden create prosperity. It doesn't create a society. And I think that's why these this call for reparations is so sad, because if you look at the civil rights movement, they weren't demanding retribution. They were simply demanding equality. And this idea that now, 150 years plus after the Civil War, we have not advanced to the point of what Dr. King dreamed of. I mean, when you demand reparations, previous generations weren't demanding reparations. What makes this generation more deserving?
Well, I don't think anyone deserves reparations. And by the way, a vast majority of the blacks in the U.S. migrated here long after slavery was abolished, right? They were not affected by slavery. And I've said this before, that slavery would still exist today had it not been for a vast majority of white Americans that stood up for, fought, and died to abolish slavery. It would still be here.
Yeah, the reparations were already paid in blood.
In lots of blood.
Lots of blood.
Everyone wants to act like, you know, white people are devils. I've heard it said, white people are devils. Are we? Are we devils?
It's actually funny. I forget which school, but there was a college. We talk about universities. There was a college that actually solicited an artificial intelligence program to go through their student body and to point out the most racist things that their students were saying online on these different message boards. And what the AI came back with was that the most racist were actually the minority class, the minority students, because they more often than white students would say, "Damn white people, I hate white people." It's become just a saying now in liberal society that, oh yep, white people. Look at over the weekend, there was a shooting in Texas, and before anything was known, the media ran with white male. I mean, we're being conditioned.
It turned out not to be a white male, by the way.
It happened to be a white male, but there was also a shooting down in Alabama, a school shooting at a high school, and that didn't make the news because the shooter was black. So if we want to be honest, the media is driving this narrative. The media doesn't care that there were three times as many people shot in Chicago over the weekend as in Texas. That didn't make the news.
No, it didn't. It didn't make the news. I agree.
It's just we're being conditioned to fight against each other, and then in all of that, people are being taught that they are owed one thing or another. They are owed free healthcare. They are owed free college. They are owed $1,000 a month just because they happen to exist. They are owed reparations because one of their ancestors may possibly have been a slave. Everyone's owed. And you wonder why the racial divide is so bad in this country right now, because the people that are being told that they owe, the actual people who allegedly owe the rest of Americans all of this, they have no idea what you're talking about. Telling people who didn't go to college, all of a sudden you have to pay for college debt for people who did. Telling people who've been paying their own health insurance for years, all of a sudden you have to pay more so that other people can get free health care. Right? Telling people who never owned a slave and never had any family members who owned slaves that now you need to pay for people even though they weren't slaves themselves. That is a lot of what's driving the divide in this country. And we can end it there, but we've been talking a lot about how to get past this divide in the country, the racial divide, the political divide. I think that one of the ways it's going to have to happen is we're going to have to stop telling one side that they are owed something by the other.
I think we just run all Democrats out of office, and I think that probably solved the problem too.
We can do that too. I mean, let's do both at the same time.
Weak leadership creates weak environments where weak people want. Period.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they just want and want and want. They don't want to work for it. So if we want to get back to a place that, you know, epitomizes strength or teaches our kids to, you know, work hard and commit themselves to getting through adversity, then we have to let them go through that adversity, and we have to commit ourselves to, you know, working harder and not making excuses for failure. Failure is okay. It's okay to fail, right? Once you fail, you get back up and do it all over again. But today, you know, failure is, there's always an excuse for failure. And I think the issue that we've created in our society is that they're saying reparations is a way of equalizing those failures. But anyway, so I think that it was good to talk about this. But you know, in our next podcast, we're going to talk about, you know, some of the solutions, right? So we started talking a little bit about that today, but talk about some of these solutions to these Democrats' crazy programs that they want to come up with.
Yeah, solutions. We'll include running them out of town on a rail, but there will also be other solutions as well. Well, that's going to be it for this edition of the Conservative Daily Podcast. Again, my name is Max McGuire.
And I'm Joe Otto.
And until next time, remember that the fight to take back this country is not over yet, but the only way we can do it is if we all work together.